darkness, confusion, and deception, which those aspiring to true being must turn away from and abandon if they are to discover the clear sky of ideas. Once we accepted this basic split between the obscurity of the experience of human beings in the world on the one hand and the philosopher's discovery of reason beyond the world on the other, we had established the template for authoritarian politics. We had lost our ability to recognise that human beings' experience in the world has its own irreducible dignity. Apparently benign when compared with other forms of more violent coercion, reason, thus understood, was nevertheless both coercive and hostile to phenomenal reality, the lived truths of the medium. Here's an excerpt from her essay, What is Authority? It was after Socrates' death that Plato began to discount persuasion as insufficient for the guidance of men and seek something liable to compel them without using external means of violence. Very early in his search, he must have discovered that truth, namely the truth we call self-evident, compels the mind, and that this coercion, though it needs no violence to be effective, is stronger than persuasion or argument. The real danger lay, in other words, not in the philosopher's contemplation of timeless ideas, but in his or her journey back to the world, where she might decide, now as the philosopher king, to use these transcendent ideas of reason as the yardsticks against which to measure the world, and against which the world should be measured. One can see the line that she is drawing here between despotic truth and reason and political despotism. Again, this is from What is Authority? The ideas relate to the varied multitude of things concrete in the same way that the yardstick relates to the varied multitude of things measurable, or as the rule of reason relates to the varied multitude of concrete events that can be subsumed under it. Likewise, the essential characteristic of specifically authoritarian forms of government, that the source of authority which legitimates the exercise of power, like the law of nature or the commands of God, must not be man-made, goes back to this applicability of the ideas of Plato's philosophy. Her language is a little difficult there, but what you can see she's saying is it's this notion that there is a yardstick which is not made by human beings in time and space in our difference, but which is imported from an absolute elsewhere, becomes the template for authoritarian politics. Why was this form of politics, one might ask, as the application of absolute laws so repugnant to a man? Now, the answer to that question requires far more time than one has tonight, but I want to talk about two interrelated answers, one in terms of the consequences of politics, and the other in terms of the consequences of the consequences for politics is that the realm of the political has been deprived of all that is normal about it. Politics, rather than being a sphere of human action, has been reduced to a sphere for the implementation of rules. Within the imagination of Western thought, as I read it, the ideal political order is one in which perfectly harmonised rule has been achieved. It is, to go back to Marx's analysis of Plato, the imperfect human space rendered more perfect by being aligned by ideas imported from elsewhere. The truly political, by contrast, and as Arendt invites us to reimagine it, was, on the contrary, that sphere in which human beings are able to act in each other's presence, enacting not what is dictated elsewhere, but our own humanity as we grapple together in the world that appears before us. Politics, freed from its secondary status, would then be the quintessential realm of human action in space and time, where we come together not under the sway of capital T truth, but to enact the business of human beings, to reveal who we are to each other in our worlds and our deeds. Now, the complexity particularly. The complexity that you might be experiencing trying to understand how she could possibly think of such inspiring notions as self-revelation as a poetry.
is not simply one use of the words, though it certainly is that. It's also testament to the accuracy of Arendt's diagnosis of the fate of the political. That politics means rule, and that freedom begins where politics ends, seems to us to follow as a matter of course from the definition of those terms. But what Arendt had in mind when he spoke about politics and when he spoke about action, which was the most synonymous with the political realm, was a particular way of being and acting in which we do not enact what already exists as a template waiting to be made manifest. Rather, it is the realm where we come together, and in the world that arises when we come together, we bring our words and actions into existence. Arendt often used the analogy of playing an instrument, playing a flute or dancing to get across what she had in mind here. The performance exists in the space between the performer and the audience, not leaving a product behind, but revealing the few of those who are present in the performance itself. That's what she meant by action. That's what she meant by the performance. And in this sense, at stake in the loss of the political was not merely the loss of one sphere of human activity, but the possibility of our experiencing ourselves as human beings at all. And here we come to the burning heart of thought, the passionate recognition that what is most precious in human existence, but also most fragile, is this rare capacity to bring the new into existence. Politics, as she articulated, it mattered because deprived of the space in which we might come together as different and equal, we are also deprived of the opportunity to live this dimension of our humanity.
Look at how feathered his cocks are. See how seamless his frocks are. Look at his paper beam over that rock star. Look at how long she walks and how far. Was she lost or maybe she was not for traveling in the stock car anymore? Maybe she spent her formative years dealing with his contentious fears and endless cheers at her endless tears. Or maybe she just got tired of watching him sniff white off a starless breast, treating his wife like less than a guest, getting his girl to clean up his mess, never showing weakness unless it's war season. It's the season of the war. She's trying to cut the cord. She's tired of planting her knees on the cold hard floor of facts, trying to act like the other girl acts. And your strike may have been exact, but you know that you never really go to the mat. You tie everything up pretty in the second act, when you know that it didn't go exactly like that. You arrive and drive by like a soft stuff bat. Like you know you should know, but you don't know where it's at. Like you know you should know, but you don't know where it's at. Like you know you should know, but you don't know where it's at. You arrive and drive by like a soft stuff bat. Like you know you should know, but you don't know where it's at. You arrive and drive by like a soft stuff bat. Like you know you should know, but you don't know where it's at. Like you know you should know, but you don't know what you did. Like you know you should know what happened when I came to bed. Like you know you should know, but you don't know. Like you know you should know, but you don't know. Like you know you should know, but you don't know what you did.
Thank you. чае, шуре, палера.
Destructive. når de hører.
Yes.
Men så skal du også have sådan inhaleringen med.
400 direkte, man. Yeah. Come on.
Street of what it could become like. Oh, my street.